Welcome to Rust Belt Running. I'm Andrew Hettinger. Joining me shortly with a coaching tip is Adam Wheeler. And after that, Matt Martin is going to be here with some running news. I'm really excited. This week, we will be reviewing the Wineglass Marathon with Steph Rubel. Steph took part in the Wineglass Marathon in October, and she was kind enough to come on and give us a review and a few tips for this race. I really enjoyed our conversation together. Before I throw it to Adam for a coaching tip, I want to ask, is there a race that you've run recently that you would like to review with us? Is there a race you're curious about that you would like more information on? Drop us a line. Our DMs on Instagram are always open, and you can find us there at Rust Belt Running. You can also email us at rustbeltrunning@gmail.com or go to our website, rustbeltrunning.com. While you're there, you can peruse our different offerings in run coaching. You can also check out our merchandise and different ways that you can support the show. We strive to keep our podcast content free, without paywalls, without ads, and we need your support to do that. Your listens and shares and reviews are part of that support. We never forget that, and we always appreciate every way that you've supported us throughout the years. All right, enough of that. Here's Adam with a Rust Belt Running coaching tip for this week.
Here's a coaching tip from those of us here at Rust Belt Running. It's the new year, and that means resolutions, new habits, people trying to incorporate new things into their year. And one of the ways to make sure that those habits stick is to plan small. Make sure that whatever new habit you're trying to incorporate is something that you feel on a scale of 1 to 10, that you feel you're a 9 out of, or a 10 out of 10 to make sure that you can stick with that habit. Something that people will often do is they'll take all the energy of a new year and they'll have all that enthusiasm and say, hey, I'm going to do this year. Maybe it's strength training with your running. You want to get stronger this year. And so in the enthusiasm of the new year, you say, you know what? I'm going to strength train 4 days a week. And you do that without really thinking, can you actually fit that into your schedule? And what ends up happening is that maybe the first couple of weeks you're able to manage those 4 days a week and getting strength training. But then the enthusiasm dips a little bit, the reality of your schedule starts to creep in, and it turns out maybe the most you can do is 2 days a week. And 2 days a week is actually really good, but if that's set against the expectation that you're going to do 4 days a week, it becomes really easy to start blaming yourself, start feeling bad about yourself for not sticking to this habit that you said you were going to try to incorporate into your schedule. And so starting small, doing something that you feel on a scale, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, that you feel like you're an 8, a 9, or a 10 out of 10 to do it every day or every week, whatever the new habit is going to be, will start to build confidence that as you start to, you know, execute that habit on a daily and a weekly basis, you'll feel good about yourself. Hey, I set out to strength train 2 days a week, and for the entire month of January, I managed to make that work. And actually, 1 or 2 weeks, I was able to do 3 days a week. Maybe that's not the ideal 4 days a week that you want to build to, but you're going to build confidence and belief in yourself that you're able to stick to the new habits that you're trying to build. And as you do that, you can start to scale up and incorporate more and more time into your schedule as you show that you're able to execute those habits. But for starting out, for doing something that's new, for doing something that maybe isn't something you've been able to do before, start small. Start with something that you feel you can execute on a regular basis. Build that belief and confidence in yourself. And then as you do that, you can scale up and take on more and more with that new habit that you're trying to build in the new year.
While many of us may be in training hibernation this winter, many of the nation's marathon elites are training for the Olympic Trials Marathon set to take place on February 3rd in Orlando. The race was initially scheduled for a noon start, but after months of discussions between the athletes and race organizers, the race was moved up to 10 a.m. due to its concerns with heat. On the women's side, we have athletes including American record holder Emily Sisson and former bronze medalist Molly Seidel. And on the men's side, we've got CJ Albertson, Connor Mance, and Jared Ward as just some of the elites fighting for those coveted top three spots. Be sure to tune in on February 3rd to see who will represent the U.S. in the 2024 Olympics. In other news, the women's 24-hour world record was recently broken again after Camille Harrit set it earlier this year. Japan's Miho Nakata set a new 24-hour record with 167.996 miles. That's Strava tax if I've ever seen it. Miho averaged 8:34 per mile to achieve the record. That's 8:34 per mile for 24 straight hours.
Thank you so much for listening today. And before we get started, a little reminder to subscribe and review us on your favorite podcast platforms. It's one of the easiest ways to support the show and what we do. If you're looking for other ways to support us, head to rustbeltrunning.com. There you can learn more about our offerings in run coaching, shop for merch, and yeah, any way that you choose to support us, we're extremely grateful for. So now we're ready to talk about the Wine Glass Marathon, 26.2 miles in Corning, New York. And I'm here with Steph Rubel from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. How are you doing, Steph?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am amazing. So I'm really excited to dig into this race and kind of see what you thought and what the logistics were. But before we get too much into the race, what made you choose Wine Glass?
So I'm pretty sure if you live in Pennsylvania, everybody knows somebody that has run Wine Glass. It's like 4 hours from anywhere in Pennsylvania or less. And it seems like a really cool destination race because it's in early October. The fall foliage is just peaking in that area. So it just seems like a nice little getaway and a fun excuse to go up to New York.
So it was 4 hours. Is that a drive that you made?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We drove. We left Friday morning for the Sunday race.
Where do you guys stay? Do you have any advice on like hotels to stay at? Like, I mean, a beautiful area like that, there's got to be cool spots to stay.
Yeah. The nice thing is the race website has a ton of partner hotels. So you have to, when you register, you have to say if you're getting the bus from the finish line or the start line. You can't drive yourself. You have to take a bus. So it's really helpful to know where you're staying before you register. So that way you can do it. We stayed near the finish line. It just made logistical sense for us to do it that way. We were probably 2 miles away from the finish line, and it was easy to drive to the bus drop off and from the finish line there.
So use the website and the partner hotels there. That's a good tip.
And all the partner hotels have late checkout. I think it was like 2 o'clock, which was really nice. And they gave you bottles of water and stuff just because you were a participant and that's why you were there. It was a really nice little added bonus that they gave.
That's really cool. What was the expo experience like?
So the expo was at the museum, the Glass Museum, which was really cool. You walked through the Glass Museum and you got, I don't remember if it was discounted or free entry into the Glass Museum with your race bib, but they also did a whole bunch of exhibits and things too that you could watch while you were there. But it wasn't a big expo. You walked in, there's a whole bunch of wine glass specific merchandise. There was probably 2 vendors, the one with the discounted shoes that you see everywhere, and maybe a couple others. And that was it. It was very, very low key, super easy to access. It was really nice and not overwhelming at all.
Those are the best. Those are the best. How was the swag? Like, did you guys get, you know, we'll talk about the medal later, but like expo swag specific. How was that?
So you get a quarter zip as your shirt. It actually has thumb holes in it too, and it's color specific based on the race and what gender you pick. So for the women's, for the full marathon, it was a purple with like black stripes. I wear it all the time. It's super comfortable. You also got a wine glass. You got a stemless wine glass, and they gave us a bottle of Prosecco, which I wasn't expecting. I was sure that was like a VIP something, but the guy's like, here you go. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool and very unexpected.
How long did that bottle last you?
I'm cracking it tonight the end of 2023.
Okay. So you touched on this a little bit. You talked a little bit about the transportation. This sounds like this is going to be one of the bigger things, like logistically, that you have to talk about. So like, what was it like? Like, what time did you have to like be at your bus pickup and stuff like that? Like, what was that whole experience like in the morning?
So I am an incredibly nervous racer. So I want to do things as early as possible, make sure I'm there anything can happen after that. So I got on one of the first three buses up to the start line in Corning. So you go from, if you're doing it at the finish line, like I did, you got on the bus that was probably two blocks from the finish line. So you could see it in the background as you're getting on a bus to drive 26 miles up the road. These people who volunteered must do this every year because it was a well-oiled machine. They're like, where's your bib? Okay, you're the full marathon. You go this way. And they're just directing traffic. It was amazing. Bus went straight up. You got dropped off. And in like Great British Baking Show status, there was just a huge white tent in the middle of a field. And that's where you sat and waited until it started. It was pretty wild that you just got dropped off in the middle of a field with a that's big awesome. Tent. But there were tons of porta potties. That's where the gear check drop off was too. Everything was right there, right at the start line. It was really easy.
Oh, so you were able to, so you dropped at the start line and they mm-hmm. took it to the finish for you. That's cool. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to like pack, you know, throw away bags of goodies or whatever.
How long Yeah,
oh, I
was probably up there an hour and a half, maybe more before the start. Because again, I'm just really anxious at the start mm-hmm. of races. And I just wanted to make sure I was there, get my fuel in and stuff like that and have enough time to use the bathroom. So I definitely was there for a pretty long time. And you could see as more waves of people were coming in. Mm-hmm. And it's not a very big race. There were probably only 2,500 that ran the full marathon.
Asuka fell.
Oh, no. Yeah, there are probably only like 2,500 that run the full marathon. And there was a VIP section, too. So if you paid more, you got to go on the inside of like the volunteer. I don't know if it was a fire hall or something that's up there where we were staged. So everybody was kind of around. It was a little chilly, too, to start the morning. So it was nice to have that.
Yeah.
The tent.
How much time, well, you said you're early. How long was the bus ride?
Probably about 20, 25 minutes. It was a nice little hike, but it was all on highway. So you weren't cutting through anything. It was nice.
How much time do you think you give yourself extra time. How much time mm-hmm. do you think somebody legitimately needs to, like, what time do you need to be at the start or the... The bus
at the bus. Yeah, I'd say at least an hour. Again, so you have enough time to, I'm sure once it got closer to the start, there were going to be needing to get on the buses, but I got on one of the first two buses, so it wasn't that bad. But then to make sure you have time for the porta potty, drop your stuff off and do what you got to do, I'd say an hour.
Was there any support at the start as far as like any snacks or drinks, or is that all stuff that you'd have to bring with you?
There, not that I saw doesn't mean that there wasn't, but, yeah. I packed all my own stuff and took it with me to the start.
Cool beans. Well, let's talk about the race. It started now.
Yes.
What a smaller race, but was there any congestion or anything at the start, that you can have in a bigger city race?
The biggest thing with the race, you're running through little towns. So in the start, the main stretch road, there's no corrals. You literally just line up because there's pacers for every 5-10 minutes-ish, depending on where you were. So I started between the 405 and the 410 pacer, just kind of a general area. So when you got onto the main road, it was one lane of traffic was still driving. So you only had one lane closed. So you really... You were congested for a congested as much as you can for a 2,500 person race, but it thinned out very quickly. And I never felt like I was in a huge group of people for the whole race. It was really, really nice and spaced out after the first, you know, mile and a half ish.
Oh, that's not bad. Water stops. I know that you do carry, but how are the mm-hmm. water stops on the race?
I think I'm going to say this about 10 times in here. You can tell these people do this every year. Like this is it's a well-oiled machine. I think there were water stops every like mile and a half ish. There were a lot. and I took water every stop because it was hot. It was very warm. You were running straight into the sun. There was very little shade. So I took it and poured it over my head. But everybody was telling you clearly, this is electrolytes, this is water, you know, and they were like, this is coming up, and you had a nice stretch, and it was on both sides of the road a lot of the times too. So it was super easy to grab. It was nice. I appreciated it.
Was the, you didn't have any issues with like the course, it's point to point. Like, was the course clearly marked for you? Any turns or anything that you were like confused on?
No, because there was no way you could really, not only is it point to point, you, for a lot of the time, it's a straight road. So you can always see people in front of you. When you got to the, you were on highways for a little bit, or, you know, bigger roads. But when you got into the little towns, that's where the people were. So you could tell like where the crowds were, that you were going to go that way. There weren't a lot of turns at all. The only part that was a little confusing, when you get to the half marathon point, because that's where things were started, you can tell that it was the start of another race. It was just a little different from what you experienced the first 13 miles.
Right. Did you run up on like half marathoners and stuff? Or
no.
They were far enough ahead. Did they start at the same time?
No, they started 45 minutes, maybe an hour before we did. It was, you were not going to have, I mean, there were people that walked. So of course there were people that got caught up on by some of the quicker people, but not where I was at. No,
you weren't running into a wall of half marathoners as a full marathon. Okay.
No.
Now you keep saying that, clearly these people do this every year. Do the smaller towns and the people who do live there, do they show up? How is the crowd support?
It was nice. I don't need a lot of crowd support. If I could just go out and run by myself and just have somebody time me, that's fine. But it was neat. I like to count dogs when I run. So there are always tons of dogs and people sitting out in their front yard. You could smell them making breakfast, and some had like little, anybody want to stop and get some pretzels? Like those kind of people. So, and there were signs up that said, remember the marathon is this weekend. And so you could tell that it was really a nice celebration of the area and welcoming people into their town. And everyone just got excited about it. And there was a sign there, because it's point to point, there were a lot of people that were spectating the whole course. So you saw a bunch of the same people in the signs. And this one woman had a sign that just said, why? And every time I saw her, I said something different about why. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm nuts. Things like that. And it was, it's like, by the end, this person was my friend of just randomly holding these signs places.
That's awesome. Yeah, I wondered how the support would be there, because you run through a lot of nothing.
Yeah, and it's nice. At least for me, I enjoyed the nothing. And you ran parallel to a bigger highway than we ran on. So you could hear like truckers honking at you from the highway on the other side. And again, you could tell people were driving the point to point because they were screaming or like waving, doing cowbells out the car window. That's on the highway awesome. Next to us. So for in some of those dead spots, there were actually people around cheering for you.
And that's probably even more welcome because it's like one-on-one support as opposed to just running through a wall of people, which is great in a bigger city race. But, you know, it's just different. It's a different connection with the crowd. That's really neat.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, answers a little bit of what I was going to kind of ask next, which is like just anything unique about this race that kind of enhanced your experience versus different races you've run?
I've run a lot of varying of races. I've run races with like 200 people and ones with, you know, thousands of people. So I think the nicest part about Wineglass is that it is smaller, but it feels special. Like it's special to the people who live in this area that you're here and you're running there. Like you took the time to come to New York to come run the race for them and support their community. And you know, just do those kinds of things. It just felt a little different and special for the area.
All right. So the race is over. Well, I guess it's not over yet because I'm going to ask you about the finish. And this is okay. A finish worth talking about because I've seen photos of it. how was the finish line organization? We can start at the 26-mile flag. So you can talk about the last 385 beautiful yards that they have.
Yeah. So the day before the marathon, me and my husband drove the last little bit of it since we were staying kind of the area. So we knew like when you hit here, this should be about 26 and then you know what to do. So if you've ever seen photos from Wineglass, the finish area, it's a strip of like their downtown business area. It's beautiful fall colors. It's just like the yellow leaves were down. And I expected to see that the whole time, and it wasn't like that. It was literally like just going out running normally. And so I was like, oh, well, where are all the pretty leaves? And then you make the turn for the end. It's like, oh, here they are. It's all right at the finish. This is what you were waiting for. It was really cool because a lot of the half marathoners stayed. I finished in like the middle of the pack. So it was people waiting for others or people had just finished. So it was really nice. It was super cool also because they had the finish line set up the day before. So you could see, You knew what to expect. You knew you hit here, you were almost done, even though the flags weren't up to tell you. And I saw my husband and I chucked my water bottle at him because I didn't want to hold it anymore. And he's has a photo and it literally looks like my water bottle's coming in his face. But everybody's out. All the little shop owners are out too. They all have signs that say, you know, congratulations. And the finish line, after you cross the finish line, it is set up because Wegmans is a grocery store out there and they sponsor the half marathon. So it's like a buffet. When you finish that race, my favorite thing, they had cans of Coca-Cola. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, Coca-Cola. I'm so excited. And I grabbed that. I got cookies and bagels. There was like everything that you could imagine. And you pass that like literally as soon as you got your medal. Like they want to make sure that you are refueling as soon as you finish that race, which was great. You walked a little bit further and then you could ring the PR bell if that's something that you did. And the really cool thing is they have these boards where they pick up your race bib number and it's like at the Olympics track and field where it has like the world records of everything and it has your name and your time and you can get your picture taken next to it, which I think is the coolest thing ever. And I just thought that was so awesome. And you can celebrate with all these people too who just finished, you know, in front of you because it's just a really cool feel. It's a finish line. Like you're already hyped up to begin with, but then you get to see all these people and all their hard work and they want to show it off too. And it was great. And then you pass after that, you get your gear check bag. UPS did it, I think it was, or FedEx, one of the two. There were only a couple, but it was based off your bib number and you just went up. They gave it right to you and it was so easy. It was probably, I don't know, 10 minutes from the time I finished, grabbed all the food, rang the bell, got my photo taken, picked up my gear check bag, and I was out. It was so quick.
That's awesome. And you felt in that 10 minutes you had a cool experience too. It's not like you felt like you know, just walked around for a second. Yeah, I can't believe that we haven't seen those boards at more races. I think that is the coolest thing that they do.
I think too, because it's a smaller race, you have the opportunity and the time. Because it was probably only like 10 seconds that you got, like once they scanned your, put in your bib number and you got your picture taken and everything. It didn't feel like a lot, but literally pings out in my mind that, and you didn't feel rushed either. So if you wanted to take time, maybe wait for somebody who was a little bit behind you and do all that, they didn't rush you. You take your time, you do what you need to do. And they did a really good job of keeping people out that didn't have bibs into the finish line area. So that was nice too. There's also a brewery that's on the main strip and there were people, you could tell they just walked right out of the finish area and went right to the brewery and they were just sitting on the sidewalk drinking beer. It was awesome. It was really cool.
Sounds like something I would do for sure. So that's you covered the finish line area perfectly. I don't have anything else to ask you on that. That just sounds like an amazing time. And yeah, I love that you talked about the flowers on the road, like the way they have it, have that finish set up is just, it's got to be one of the more beautiful finishes in racing. I mean, I love the photos of it, and it's, you know, made it intriguing to me to run that race. So just overall experience, I'm curious about maybe two things that kind of stuck out to you, whether it's your own performance or the race itself.
I would say if you look at the course map, it doesn't do justice how rolling of a course it is. There were a lot of people, I live in Pittsburgh, I train on hills, I'm used to it. But there were a lot of people I heard talking to people that they were running with that they were not ready for the incline, especially from like the 10K mark to the half marathon point. So definitely that's something I would point out. You do need to still run hills. I didn't feel like it was awful because of the way I train. But again, depending on what your terrain is. Also, the road is slanted for the first half of the race. And so I ended up running higher up on the road just to avoid the slantedness of the road. It did add into my distance, which I'm not a tangent queen, so it's not always going to mess with my distance. But that's something I would warn people about as well. Make sure that you're aware of the slanting of the road. It's a little more drastic than you think. It's pretty noticeable. And then when you're in the second half, you're like, wow, I don't have to deal with that anymore. That's like, where did it go? It was really, really wild. It is a fast course. A lot of people say it's 100% a fast course. The second half, especially, you can notice the downhill more than in the first half, I think.
That's good to know. So I guess last thing I'll ask you, would you do this race again?
Yeah, I would probably do the half other than the full, just because of the no shade part. It was, you run right into the sun. There's zero shade. The only shade you got in the first half was from like the hillside of the road. I still have the tan lines from running right into the sun. It was about 24 miles. And then you run into a little park area and you're like, oh my gosh, there's the shade. Like, and it was outrageously warm that day too. So I can't blame it all on the course itself, but I would do the half. I think it would be a quick half to do, but I did the full. I'm good. I would recommend anybody do it at least once, but I don't need to do it again.
Yeah, I got to go back to the finish one time. There was one question I meant to ask, and this is a terrible race to forget to ask about the medal.
Yes. So
how was the medal?
I have the medal. It's the bottom of a wine bottle. You can see kind of the divot here, and they etch into glass.
That's so
cool. It's really cool too. And on the website, they talk about if it breaks in your transit home, they will send you another one. So it's, you know, if you're flying or something and something happens to it, they will replace it. But that medal is also one of the big reasons why I picked that race. I wanted that medal.
Yeah, that medal is freaking sweet. And yeah, I was just like, I was getting ready to close this up here. And I was like, we did not talk about the medal. Like, new format, we're writing out new outlines. And of course, something was going to get missed. And it happens to be like the one thing we all chase as runners is medals. So... well, Steph, I really enjoyed hearing about the wine glass marathon. I'm glad that you took time out, to, you know, just talk about the experience of the race itself. You and I have talked a lot about your result. I openly was stressing out about it. We were recording a podcast that day and, I was stressing out about you. but yeah,
it's don't worry. I was stressing out about myself. It's fine.
But yeah, real fun to sit here and just, you know, listen to you talk about this. And I can't wait to hear about more races in the future. So, yeah, thanks again. You can find her on Instagram, Steph with two F's is her Instagram handle. And we are Rust Belt Running on Instagram. We aren't on any other social media platforms because they're all just cesspools. And yeah, we're here. This is what we're going to do for a while. So everybody, thank you so much for listening. And enjoy your miles, everybody, in the new year. It's a new year.